you by Oklahomans for Sovereignty and Free Enterprise. And now your co-hosts, Amanda Teagarden and Don Wyatt.
And welcome, freedom-loving Oklahomans, to another hour of America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. This is Amanda Teagarden in studio with my co-host, Don Wyatt.
Delighted to be here. We're in the middle of July, and we're actually getting a bit of a respite from the normal heat and maybe even a little bit of rain. Kind of a pleasant change.
It was very nice to hear rain.
Yes, it was.
This week we needed it. My cucumbers needed it.
Exactly.
We are broadcasting from Broken Arrow, Oklahoma, in the great state of Oklahoma, which we just mentioned, but we're with OK Safe. That's OK-Safe.com, S-A-F-E.com, and we have two other websites, if you're interested. One is the next one, which we're really we consider this a useful website.
Right.
There's a lot of information that's stored there.
Dense education
on what the public calls Obamacare, but it's exposinghealthcarereform.com, exposinghealthcarereform.com. Our third website is stopsmartmetersinoklahoma.org. And Don, you've got two websites.
We do. We're involved with the Tulsa912project.com. That's an organization as well as a website. And we've also spawned a separate specific interest website from that called boondoggleblog.com. And on boondoggleblog, we talk about all the ways in which public money is wasted on useless projects. So that's our definition of a boondoggle, and we talk about a lot of them.
A lot of subject matter.
It's a target-rich environment.
It is. That's a good way to put it, target-rich. Today's show, if we're going to have a title, Don, the today's show is going to be, let's call it, The Descent Toward Socialized Medicine in the United States.
I think that's a good title.
And it is a descent. It's not an ascent.
Right.
And healthcare reform, what the public calls Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, or Unaffordable Care Act,
exactly.
Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, which was passed in 2010, is an issue that's on everyone's mind as implementation continues to roll out. Government takeover of health care has been and will continue to be the battle for all of us. Government wants socialized medicine. You can watch a lot of the hearings on it on C-SPAN if you're interested.
That's true.
And there's been some really revealing discussions that take place on the House side if you're interested. The American people, of course, Don, do not want anything to do with this.
Repeatedly.
Which is why we're getting it.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Today's guest is evidence of the way medicine can and should work here, not just in Oklahoma, but how it can work it throughout the United States. It's
true.
A model. Wouldn't they're operating without government interference and at a better price? Dr. Keith Smith is a surgeon at the Surgery Center of Oklahoma. Their website is surgerycenterok.com. And Don, I am very happy that we've got Dr. Smith on. I think he is a breath of fresh air from the medical world and has a lot of common sense. I've heard him on several other radio shows. I've met him in person and listened to a presentation of his, which he's becoming more and more well-known, as he should, as the surgery center should be as well. The doctor has a blog, so if you go to the surgerycenterok.com and click on Dr. Keith Smith's blog, you're going to find a lot of refreshing blog posts there.
Wonderful reading, too, I'll say.
It is, and you think that's from a doctor? Yes, it is. There are real human beings out there.
And it's pointed, and it's constitutionally correct. Not politically correct, necessarily, but constitutionally correct, which impresses me.
He just says it. Anyway, our guest is already on the line. Dr. Smith, are you there?
I am. Thanks for having me.
Oh, we're delighted that you're here, Dr. Smith. So let's go ahead and just get started. Can you tell us about the surgery center and how it got started? And then tell us about your blog site and why you started writing a blog.
Sure. The surgery center started in 1997 when Dr. Steve Lante and I just really sick and tired of seeing the way the hospitals treated patients, not only as patients, but financially as victims. And the way they treated us, I'm an anesthesiologist, actually, I'm not a surgeon, but the way they treated us, the way they treated the surgeons that we worked with, we just decided we could complain about that for the rest of our careers or walk away from our busy practices and do something about it. So we actually bought an old burnout, corporately mismanaged surgery center on a hunting trip and got started, and against just insurmountable odds and against the usual suspects, the crony capitalist in the medical industrial complex rooting against us and working against us at the state capitol, it's become a wild success, a success that neither Dr. Lonte and I never imagined could reach this height. From the very beginning, we decided to do two things very differently. We decided we would never take a dime of government money. We just decided the federal government is not a reliable or an honest or trustworthy partner or payer in any capacity, and we did not want to take the leverage that went along with taking their money. We also increasingly saw philosophically accepting federal money as an act of theft. That gives you some idea of the politically, philosophically where I am. It didn't make sense for me to take money from my neighbor for care I delivered to someone else across town they didn't even know. The second thing that we did differently was we decided that we would engage in what at the time we called price honesty, and that we would say this is what we charge and we would mean it. One of the first things that happened was uninsured patients would call and ask for a price to have their hernia fixed or their gallbladder removed, and we would give them a price. It was very simple. I'd call the surgeon and say, how much do you want? And as an anesthesiologist, I charged for my time. I knew basically what I felt like my time was worth, and we knew the costs of the supplies and the staff to do these cases. So we started quoting prices over the phone, and we did this for years and became a real haven for the uninsured so they could actually afford their surgery and not face the bankruptcy that the big hospitals would force down their throats. Increasingly over time, we found it very puzzling that a lot of the big insurance companies did not want to deal with us. We knew our prices were lower than anybody else even in this whole region, if not in the whole country. And we felt like quality-wise, we were as good or better than anybody, and just found it puzzling. Thought, you know, if we ran an insurance company, you know, we are the kind of outfit that we would want to deal with. But far from the case. The insurance companies work very hard to steer patients away from us with various out-of-network penalties and deductibles and co-pays and all manner of punitive things to keep patients away from us. So about 4 years ago, I'm compressing this pretty hard, but about 4 years ago, a little over 4 years ago, we decided to out them and just put our prices online with the hopes that it would make us more known to people that had high deductibles, people who didn't have insurance at all, self-funded companies that pay for their employees' health care out of operational revenue. We decided we're going to be more known to the people who actually pay the bills. We're also going to expose this cartel that is anything but a free market in the United States. The health care system in the United States, many people say it represents a failure of the free market. There's very little free market other than plastic surgery and LASIK surgery and health care. And what happened, the first thing that happened was Canadians started showing up, and that was instructive. And the other thing that happened is people started using our prices to leverage a better price for themselves in their home market, whether it was Alaska or Wisconsin or Florida, and they would send me emails. We've come to learn now that our posting our prices at our surgery center in Oklahoma City has had a pretty significant deflationary effect on surgical care in the entire United States, certainly in this region.
That what you're describing is actually what a free market would be.
That's right. And of course, what goes along with finding yourself in a competitive market is not just better pricing. It's better quality, because people aren't really just looking for the lowest price. They're looking for the best value. And healthcare is no different than, and it shouldn't be any different than any other industry in the United States that has to subject itself to the discipline of the market. And the difference between us and a lot of others is we welcome that, and we see we see open and honest competition as the best thing for patients, not just financially, but quality-wise. And we cannot be more excited about what our move of just, you know, saying, here's what we do and here's how what we charge for it. That is so radical in healthcare, but it's had an effect far beyond the borders of the state of Oklahoma. I've been speaking all over the United States to people whose, you know, jaws just fall when they see our pricing, and they're flying into Oklahoma City every day. It's Oklahoma City's actually become a bit of a medical tourist destination for people trying to escape the prohibitively expensive healthcare markets in Alaska and Massachusetts and Florida and California. It's been quite fun.
What do you do about your own insurance? You hear doctors with hefty malpractice bills that they have to pass on. You know, the premiums are quite high. What do you do about malpractice insurance for yourselves?
The malpractice premiums in Oklahoma actually are not as confiscatory as they are in a lot of other states. So I don't think that the price of my malpractice insurance contributes significantly to my fees. That's not really an issue, even in a high-risk field like anesthesia. And I do a lot of pediatric anesthesia, which is particularly high-risk. It doesn't really contribute to the fees. Keep in mind, too, it's not the physician fees that bankrupt people. It's the hospital fees. It's the institutional fees. Very rarely is a patient sent to the poorhouse because a physician wants his money. I'm sure there are people who disagree with that and are just howling right now. But by and large, it's the hospital bills that are just completely out of control and out of reach of the average American.
Dr. Smith, maybe you could help us and our listeners by giving us a little bit of a background or a brief tutorial on how we got to where we already are, even before the Unaffordable Care Act, as you correctly describe it. Even before that, health care in general, had already been significantly encroached upon by changes. Can you run through some of those changes? I know once upon a time they had diagnostic-related groups. That was a big buzzword in the industry and ended up changing the price schedules that everybody used. Help us understand more about that.
It goes back really to World War II, where there were wage and price controls, and the only way that employers could significantly increase the benefits to prospective employees and keep or attract future employees was to make their benefit package more attractive. And so health insurance as a purchase became an expensable and tax-deductible event for businesses when it was not deductible or expensable by individuals. So that was one of the first very strange twists in healthcare, was the government getting involved and making the purchasing power for insurance much more powerful for businesses than it is for individuals. Both sides of the aisle are to blame for not undoing that. Probably the Republicans more than the Democrats, as they are in Washington. They've historically been in the back pocket of the insurance companies ever since then. The next thing that happened was a piece of legislation called the Hill-Burton Act, which created community hospitals all over the United States. Up until that point, the vast majority of hospitals were owned and controlled by the physicians who worked there.
Or churches or religious institutions, I think,
yes.
Right?
But the vast majority were owned and controlled by physicians.
Right.
There were a few, yes, that were charitable and church-controlled. But that allowed the physician to deal with patients charitably, not only as their physician, but also as the director, controller, or owner of the institution or hospital in which the patient was housed. So a patient couldn't say to their doctor, this hospital bill is unreasonable, and the doctor, he couldn't say, there's nothing I can do about it. It was his hospital. And so when the Hill-Burton Act passed, it created all these government hospitals all over the United States, and they did exactly what any government entities do. they got real greedy and thirsty for more money. And it's no coincidence that just right on the heels of the passage of Hill-Burton and the presence of all these government hospitals, Medicare and Medicaid and the Great Society appeared. And it's like all government programs, the excuse of the alibi of tyrants is always the welfare of the masses. And the Great Society was about it was all for our own good. What it really was about was lining the pockets of the crony capitalists that had figured out then that they could make a lot of money taking health care dollars from the federal government. So I believe the Hill-Burton Act was a precursor to Medicare and Medicaid, which absolutely are the greatest distortions in American health care. Anything since that time really pales in significance to the passage of the Hill-Burton Act, the twisting of the tax code, and the presence of Medicare and Medicaid until this Unaffordable Care Act. And I won't call it by its name because it's silly. I mean, the purpose of this bill is to crash the system so that we will all see higher prices for insurance, higher prices for health care. It's supposed to introduce complete chaos into the medical marketplace. So the American people will beg for the sequel, which is single payer.
Exactly.
And Barney Frank, he's so bright. I completely disagree with him on almost everything. But in a very rare slip, you can watch this on YouTube, he says it.
That's right. He says
that the public option is the best way to get to single payer, and that's their goal.
What you're calling that is universal health care, because we're moving towards socialized medicine like other countries have, which is what this single payer is. For our listeners, the Hill-Burton Act was passed, Don, in 1946. And who was president?
That was Truman.
He and I have recently been discussing the impact of Harry Truman on American policy.
Yep.
And it's just incredible how many bad ideas came out of the Truman era, and this is one of them. And sure, you're right, it is. If you want to look it up, you can look up the Hill-Burton Act of 1946, and it's just exactly as Dr. Smith is saying, the precursor to Medicaid and Medicare.
Yep. And then Medicare and Medicaid were they birthed in the 60s with that Great Society, or was that actually earlier than that? I've forgotten now.
Yeah, it was in the early 60s. And keep in mind, over 90% of people 65 and over had health insurance when Medicare was enacted. I was born in 1961, and the hospital bill for my birth was $125. And I remember my dad telling me how angry he was when he saw the bill for $125. But they didn't have insurance, and they were able to pay that.
Right.
But it was the presence of government and the presence of distorting third parties that have driven the price of care through the roof.
One of the things that always puzzles me when I see my, quote, explanation of benefits documentation is you get the published bill for a procedure or an event might be $100,000, and my copay would be $700, and the insurance company would pay $600, and the rest would be an adjustment. What does that all mean?
Well, there are two sides to helping you make that make sense, and they're counterintuitive. So, if I've got a couple of minutes, I'll box it in and explain it.
Let's do that.
You have 6 minutes.
Okay, that's enough time. One issue is from the hospital side. The hospital is, most of these hospitals are not for profit. I put that in quotation marks. They're not for profit entities, which basically means they don't pay tax. But on their books, it has to look like they didn't make any money. Well, they're making so much money that they need all the red ink that they can find to maintain the fiction of this not for profit status. So they are very happy to issue $100,000 bills when they know they're only going to collect $20,000, because that gives them $80,000 of red ink that they can then blot out some giant profit somewhere else.
Do they actually report that as a loss?
Oh, yeah. It's bad debt. And then that allows them to carry cash reserves equal to that. And that's why you see you know, these big hospitals just blowing up, just going everywhere and building and buying physician practices and, you know, buying entire hospital systems. And you think, well, where did they get this cash? And so they have all these losses on the books, but they carry all these and the losses are completely fictional. The other thing you need to know is there's a little thing called the uncompensated care program, or the disproportionate share hospital payments. And the hospitals don't like for people to talk about this, but at the end of the year, they claim they lost all this money, and the federal government and the taxpayers basically send them a rebate to the extent that they claim that they lost money. So they're inclined to overstate and overbill, and they're happy to show an $80,000 loss. And while they wave the charity flag with one hand, saying they're caring for the indigent, with the other hand, they're fleecing the taxpayer for these very same patients.
So that rebate is our money going to the hospital, the nonprofit.
Absolutely. Yeah, and then, of course, they said we're giving up our uncompensated care payments. That's why we need Medicaid expansion. And then, of course, they push for Medicaid expansion, and then this man in the White House rescinds the cancellation of the uncompensated care payments. So they're getting, you know, they're getting, a lot of these states are getting both. So now, on the other side are the insurance companies. And on the insurance company side, there's this animal called PPO repricing. So the insurance company goes to the employer and says, we rode in on our white horse and we reduced that hospital bill from $100,000 to $20,000. We've saved you $80,000.
That's what they claim exactly. That's
and,
right.
And then they tell the employer, oh, and by the way, you now owe us, you know, consistent with our contract, 28% of that savings. if you think through that, you realize the insurance companies are inclined and incentivized to seek out the most gigantic bills that they can find. And that was the mysterious missing piece of the puzzle that Dr. Lonte and I could not figure out until very recently. We realized, okay, knee arthroscopy at our surgery center is $3,740 by the finest surgeons in this region, and the insurance companies want nothing to do with this.
Of course, there's no money in it for them.
There's no pricing revenue in it, and that's why they shun us.
So if the real cost to do that procedure is $3,700, is it likely that the rest of us in our traditional healthcare systems would see a published bill more like $20,000 or $30,000 for it?
Oh yeah, as a rule. Keep in mind, too, our $3,740 is inclusive of anesthesia, surgeon, and facility fees, unlike the hospital.
So you don't get four separate bills.
That's right. But our bills typically are one-sixth to one-tenth of what the hospitals charge for the same thing.
Wow.
And we're making money. We didn't have those prices imposed onto us. Those prices are emerging from an increasingly competitive market. And frankly, I don't know if my prices are right till somebody really starts seriously competing with me.
But you said you're making money.
Yeah.
Everybody is earning a living. You're paying the bills. The doors are open. The lights are on. Patients are getting care. You have all the supplies you need and at those prices.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, we came up with those prices on our own. The reason our prices are so low is that we've eliminated the most greedy and inefficient profit seeker from the equation, and that's the not-for-profit hospital. We actually act more like a not-for-profit entity than they claim, you know, than the status they claim.
Before we lose the bottom of the hour break here, can you just share with our listeners what your experience with infection is in your facility? I read that on your website, and it was very impressive.
Yeah, we actually post that online on the Frequently Asked Questions site. I think in 2012, our infection rate was actually zero. I think we did 7,750 cases and did not have a single infection. But in almost all years, our infection rate is less than 0.1%, and most of the time it's less than 0.05%. When the national average is 4 to 6.
Exactly. I was wanting you to share with our listeners what the numbers are in the other parts of the industry.
Well, it makes sense because you got more people crammed into facilities, more employees to keep track of. Well,
I think it just goes back to what I've been saying to my friends for years. Like, name me one thing the government does better than et cetera.
Yes. All right. That's the music indicating the end of the first half of America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. Our special guest today is Dr. Keith Smith, an anesthesiologist at the Surgery Center of Oklahoma. Suggest you go to their website and look them up. We're going to take a very brief break. Oh, by the way, Don, this is an educational break. You're going to listen to the four buckets of meaningful use.
I'm ready for that.
Man, doesn't this sound exciting?
Oh, yeah.
Stick around, but listen to the break.
Now, if you have ever attended seminars, and when I talk about meaningful use, I always talk about the four buckets of meaningful use. And essentially, as we move through this transformative process where you are being challenged to adopt health information technology, any of the meaningful use measures, whether you're at a stage one, a stage two, as we move forward to stage three, and possibly stage four, you can always drop the measures into one of four buckets. The first bucket is adopt and use technology. They are just asking you simply to turn something on or start using a certain type of technology. Measures may also go into a bucket for capture data. Now, this becomes very important because a lot of what's going to happen in the reform of our reimbursement system, and again, this gets triggered by the king who makes the rules. So this has been triggered by legislation, namely the Affordable Care Act, so you can expect your commercial payers to follow suit with this. But our blanket fee-for-service reimbursement is going to go away in the long term. So the data that you capture becomes very, very critical for the future, but that may be another place where you are being challenged with health IT. The next bucket is moving data interoperably between disparate systems, and this is for typically coordination of care, transitions of care, which is one of the things we're talking about today, and then the last bucket is report data. It is now very much an expectation that you will report clinical data to CMS. They have removed this as a formal measure. It is now part of the definition of being a meaningful user. It is expected, but that's not where it stops. You are also being asked to report data to immunization registries, to state cancer registries. So reporting of the data becomes very important as we move forward. So these are the four buckets that you'll always see, as I call the marks of meaningful use, what you're being challenged to do. And when we look at stage one meaningful use, we took a very firm stance with the measures that you were asked to embrace. In the first two buckets, you were asked to purchase and adopt and start using a certified EHR technology and start to capture data. When we got into the other two buckets of moving data and reporting data, it was a lot of positioning. It was a test of exchanging data with another provider. It was a test of submission of data to an immunization registry. As we move into stage two, we are taking a very firm stance in all four buckets. You have measures that very core measures that fall into all four buckets very, very strongly.
And welcome back to the second half of America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. This is Amanda Teagarden with my co-host Don Wyatt. Buckets.
Buckets, yes, lots of buckets.
We have lots of buckets, and that tells you what. The lady who was speaking on meaningful use is named Adele Allison, and she is the National Director of Government Affairs at Success EHS, which is Electronic Health System,
right.
Defines, and she's defining the four different marks of meaningful use and the health IT goals that go along with each one. I'm reading this. You can watch this if you're so interested, and you can catch it on YouTube, Don. But she's the Director of Government Affairs at Success EHS. And
buckets are a really good receptacle for nausea
for slop.
Issues, aren't they?
It's a slop bucket. When they're saying stage one, stage two, the first thing that popped into my mind was cancer.
Exactly. And it is.
It is. This is really bad. If you go to the exposinghealthcarereform.com website, you can, right on the front page, it blows the lid off. What healthcare reform really is about the technology systems and the adoption of electronic health records, creation of these networks, information sharing, and as she said repeatedly, if you did an exam, you know, just capture the word, report, capture
That's
the
right.
The data, report the data. And you're reporting these data across jurisdictions.
Yep.
You're going from the provider.
Indiscriminate distribution.
It is, you know, but you know what? Your spouse can't see your medical record.
Of course
right?
not.
Right, because of HIPAA. But yeah. Everybody else, all the subcontractors, the IT personnel,
Germany.
The software, Germany. Interoperable, because everything is interoperable.
That's
so
right.
Who really wrote the bill were those who were in the IT and the software companies, had a big hand in writing the Unaffordable Care Act. The insurance companies had a hand in this, and also the research universities.
That's
why?
Right.
Because they all are going to benefit financially from this reform. It had nothing to do with making sick people well. And it also redefined, it was two parts. The first healthcare reform bill was the Stimulus Act, which provided all the funding, billions of dollars, right. for the fiber optic cables,
right.
the broadband initiative.
The infrastructure.
The yeah. infrastructure there, and the funding through the High-Tech Act for the electronic health records.
That's right.
And there's where we first started seeing the meaningful use requirement. You can't just adopt an electronic health record. You have to demonstrate that you're yeah. using it.
The bribes to the doctors to convert.
Right. In this state, the Ohiat Trust, the Oklahoma Health Information Exchange Trust, has regularly been meeting since their creation in 2010 to give out stimulus money that they got, the SHICAP yep. grant, via vouchers to providers across the state so that they will adopt, there's their payment,
That's
is
right.
the voucher, is the payment, to adopt and move toward electronic health records that are certified by the Ohiat Trust.
Right.
But Don, you and I are not going to talk about the conflict of interest of the trustees on the trust and which electronic health record systems
sure
which
we are. With
networks that get approved. And it happens to be one trustee, happens to be Dr. David Kendrick, who is the president of My Health Access Network.
That's right.
And he is, that's one of the certified health information organizations that
that's
the
right.
trust certifies for all these providers to adopt the electronic records. The other one is SmartNet, and then Norman Physicians Hospital, Oklahoma Hospital Association.
That's right.
So there's a lot of conflict of interest, and all they're just bypassing that, and they just excuse themselves from the vote on that particular thing. And in the meantime, their party, their by the way, Dr. Smith, do you remember the name Craig Jones?
Oh, yeah.
Craig Jones is a trustee of the Ohiat Trust, and he represents what? The Oklahoma Hospital Association.
Yeah, he's the president of the or the executive director, if not the president of the Oklahoma Hospital Association.
I'm a frequent attendee of the Ohiat Trust meetings, and the most frequent statement I've heard from Craig Jones, how can we make money at this? How can we make some money?
That's what it's all about.
So let's get back to our guest is Dr. Keith Smith. And what did you think about this meaningful use? Let's talk about electronic health records. Do you use those at your facility?
No, we have no plans to. I've always thought that once patient records became digitalized, they were no longer very secure. The part in Meaningful Use 3 that people need to understand is that there is no request for records. The physicians are being told to leave their computers on and hooked up to the internet so that the federal bureaucrat epidemiologists can just grab the information when they want to.
I did not know that.
Yeah, I found that out just the other day. I actually wrote a blog on electronic medical records, and a friend called me who's a physician and said, "Man, you've missed it. It's actually worse than what you've written," which is kind of hard for me. But Meaningful Use Part 3 allows CMS and the feds and their do-gooder epidemiologists to just grab this data when they want. So we don't have any Of course, we don't take federal money, so the feds don't have a big hammer to hit us with for not adopting EMR. And we hope to be completely third-party free and carrier-free in terms of our revenue stream before too much longer. Electronic medical records is about lining the pockets of these crony capitalists. And you know, Newt Gingrich was the big lobbyist for Alltel, which is one of the most gigantic companies. And you know, the Republicans have got all kinds of blood on their hands with this too, because, like you said, a lot of this stimulus stuff happened during the Bush administration. So, you know, it's on both sides of the aisle, and it's really, really disturbing.
If you go to the ExposingHealthcareReform.com website, there is a PowerPoint presentation that OKSafe put together for the House Joint Committee on the Federal Health Law.
That's right.
And if you go there, particular PowerPoint, we uploaded it to Scribd.
Right. I remember when you made that presentation.
Yes, and it's a little bit modified, but it's up on the Scribd account. That thing has been viewed more than 3,500 times.
And that's even not enough.
And that's probably not enough. And that's just to let you know the interest is there. But
It's all over the country.
It is all over the country, and the information is there is straight out of their documents.
That's
you
right.
Can't make this stuff up. It's right. It's straight out of their documents, and the electronic health requirements, the standards that they're talking about when they're talking about health standards, in many cases refers to the requirement for interoperability between disparate systems, as
That's right.
the lady in the video
Exactly.
was talking about, disparate systems.
She didn't say it, but the elimination of silos is the way we've also termed that.
Yes, a silo would be a normal barrier to information sharing.
Right.
It could be a state agency, a barrier between agencies,
right?
Or a barrier, let's say your house would be considered a silo.
That's right.
Because it's not connected to your neighbor's house.
That's right.
Or your bank account should be considered a silo because it shouldn't
right.
be connected to your neighbor's house. But what you're describing is that they leave their computer systems on at the hospital, at the lab, or at the pharmacy, because we're moving toward electronic pharmacies, right. E-prescribing as well. So all of these interactions with the health system, and it's really a system, a complete electronic profile of you as a human being,
yep.
every single thing about you, your medical
yep.
record.
Health record,
excuse
not
me,
just
you're
medical.
Right. You are correct. It is your health record, your habits.
Where you go, what you do, and how you do it.
Food you eat,
yep.
whatever it is, it's part of your medical record.
Got any guns at home?
Yes, that's a very prevalent. Do you ask if people have guns, Dr. Smith, when they come in?
Yeah, and they get a discount.
I forgot you guys were hunting when you bought this. That's very good.
I love that. Great that's answer.
Good. How do people pay you? They can pay you with cash, credit card.
Most people pay with a cashier's check or wire the money.
Right.
We just implemented a credit card use program 6 months ago, and that's been popular.
With a slight premium, I assume?
Yeah, because we're charged 3.5% or 5%, depending
right.
on who the company is.
Exactly.
So I just add that on.
Yep.
Some people pay us cash, not very many. People that travel. So many people are coming to Oklahoma City from Alaska and Massachusetts, they don't want to carry that much cash with them. So they're probably afraid Homeland Security will take it from them.
Yeah, they would.
They usually use credit card or wire the money.
You would probably take cashier's checks, wouldn't you? You told me you kidded once, cash, credit, or Krugerrands.
Yeah, that's right. We actually had a guy offer to pay us in silver and gold, bullion, from Texas one time, and well, we took it. I mean, it's
of course. That's hard money.
Yeah, well, it's money. Yeah, of course it is.
All right. You have already explained to us the Hospital Association's interest in expanding Medicaid. There are radio commercials going on right now about a plan for Healthy Oklahoma. It's a special interest group in this push to expand Medicaid. Have you had any interaction with that organization?
No, I'm the last person they'd want to talk to. Of course, that organization is completely funded by the hospitals in Oklahoma.
The hospital associations, and their interest is in expanding Medicaid.
Right, and keep in mind the prices that are online at our surgery center are actually less than what the what Medicaid pays the big hospital. So no wonder they want to expand it.
Yeah, good point.
I've always scratched my head. I think, you know, we hear from, you know, the Craig Joneses of the world or the big hospitals, you know, Medicaid's killing us. It underpays us. We're suffering all these losses. We have to cost shift to make up for this.
Oh my gosh,
you know, Medicaid is awful. And then out of the other side of their mouth, we want to expand Medicaid.
They do. That's exactly right. Well said.
And the reason is because they make a lot of money off of Medicaid. They make a whole lot of money off Medicaid. And that's why they want it expanded.
Dr. Smith, you know, the people of Oklahoma, the grassroots people of Oklahoma, for the last couple of years have fought back against the implementation of an insurance exchange in the state of Oklahoma. There's, for our listeners, there are two exchanges. There's the Health Information Exchange, which was funded and started on with the stimulus money, and that's the exchange electronically of health information, medical records between the provider, can be between the patient, the provider, and the lab and the pharmacists and the universities and the government, the public health department. So that's electronic. That's the movement of the health information. The other exchange, which is a companion exchange, which completes the triangle. Here's the magic triangle, a system that connects a patient, a provider, and a payer into one system. That's the picture of Obamacare and the insurance exchange.
Right.
Our job as grassroots has been to stop the implementation of an insurance exchange in Oklahoma. We've had to push back, Don, which you know
well. Repeatedly.
Three times.
Yep.
They've tried it three different times. This is the conservative, Republican-led legislature in the state of Oklahoma has run three different bills with different wording to do the same thing, which is connect that payer system by an exchange. Right now, there's a live round. We're in the interim period between sessions. We have a two-year session. We're in the interim. There's a bill. It's Senate Bill 254 by Kim David and Dr. Cox.
Right.
Bastions of conservative. I mean, they're...
An Integris employee.
Oh, thank you. Yes, an Integris employee who got an award from Planned Parenthood, by the way. Okay. Both Republicans. But so they... So there they are. They're the authors of this particular bill. And this Senate bill gives the Oklahoma Health Care Authority the authority to verify a recipient's income to see if they qualify for the care or the benefit with the Oklahoma Tax Commission. Okay, that's fine because the Oklahoma Health Care Authority, Oklahoma Tax Commission, we're going to see what the income of this customer is, you know, the citizen. But the new language in Senate Bill 254 says, and the IRS, the Internal Revenue System. So they're adding to a verification system. This is the new language. So that's what we have to stop. The key, one of the hallmarks of the insurance exchange, the federal exchange, is connecting to the IRS, the U.S. Social Security Administration, the Department of Homeland Security, and the Treasury Department. So this is one of those components of a federal exchange.
Right.
So what I think they're doing is laying the groundwork to make the Oklahoma Health Care Authority the federal exchange in the state of Oklahoma.
Clearly.
And if you look at that in the context with the $40 million bump in their budget that was approved by the governor, and this effort here and the doing away with the Insure Oklahoma, which ties to the employer, they're already looking at that. I don't know. Did you read the Levitt report, Dr. Smith?
No, until I was so sick I couldn't read anymore.
Well, that basically they're
you need
saying
some of those buckets again, don't you?
the Levitt, that was $250,000 for them to produce a report that says expand Medicaid and use the Insure Oklahoma infrastructure.
And keep in mind the history of the healthcare authority. That was a gift by Governor David Walters to Ira Magaziner and Bill Clinton, when they were wanting to start the Clinton Healthcare Plan. And the Oklahoma Healthcare Authority was formed by David Walters, hoping to curry favor with those goons and thugs in D.C. so that he could then secure a job in Washington, D.C. And he brought a Canadian socialist named Dr. Garth Splinter to come in and run it. And it was meant to be the very same type of exchange that you're talking about. At that point, the Medicaid was administered by DHS here in Oklahoma. But the healthcare authority lobbied very hard to remove the administration of Medicaid away from the Department of Human Services here in Oklahoma into the healthcare authority. So the healthcare authority, it could be abolished, right, as far as I'm concerned, and DHS could run Medicaid. But just the budget to run the healthcare authority is almost $100 million. So you're exactly right. It's not meant to be an exchange. It was exchanged from the very beginning, but it's a receptacle that I think really should be abolished.
That's a very interesting history. And remind me, after this show's over, I'm going to send you by email a diagram of a newspaper article I found at the Capitol from 1992, which is a picture diagram of this healthcare system that they envisioned at that time frame that you're talking about, which would have been 92.
Yep.
Of this whole network, which they didn't have the technology to do then, but the vision was there.
That's right.
I did not know the connection between the Healthcare Authority and Ira Magaziner. That is a great bit of information.
That's priceless. Thank you, Doctor.
Yeah, that's what it was. There's no reason for that entire agency to exist as far as I'm concerned.
Let me ask you this. Are there some ways that you can advise or educate or suggest for us or just normal everyday patients to work with other providers to try to bypass Obamacare? What options and choices do we have following your model?
Well, you know, the market is a powerful thing, and for patients who seek out market-driven or market-disciplined physicians or facilities, that's probably the most powerful thing that can happen. Whenever people call me and they ask for a recommendation for a physician, I say, well, just find someone who's not a hospital employee. That's because if a doctor's working for a hospital, he's not necessarily working for you if the interests are between his boss and the patient are not aligned.
That's a really good point.
One of the most powerful things that patients can do is exercise their choice and avoid hospital employed doctors.
And the moral to the story is they do exist. Am I thinking correctly about that?
Yeah. In Oklahoma, the hospitals are buying up practices, you know, as fast as they can, in spite of not making a profit.
Almost huge losses.
They're trying to buy practices as aggressively as they can, and they really don't know what to do with all this money that they have. But physicians in Oklahoma, by and large, are fairly independent players, and there's still a lot of physicians that are independent, even though our numbers are dwindling. Have as high a deductible if you have insurance as you possibly can. Look at your insurance as a catastrophic kind of backstop to pay for those things that are otherwise bankrupting and unaffordable. And then pay out of your pocket and ask people up front, how much is this going to be? Now, I have a $10,000 deductible on my health insurance policy. I've never filed a claim on it since I've had it in the late 1990s.
But you carry insurance.
I carry insurance, but I have a huge deductible, and I've never filed a claim.
And when I first had medical insurance, that's what it was almost all like. And that all changed from the early 70s through where we are today. That the catastrophic coverage, or what we used to call major medical, was the norm, not the exception back then.
Yeah, and the government's trying to eliminate that. You know, in Massachusetts, a young, healthy 25-year-old male is paying $2,500 a month for insurance. Well, that's $30,000 a year. He probably doesn't need it. Wow. You know, if he banked that for 2 years, he'd have $60,000. And, you know, the Oklahoma Heart Hospital is quoting upfront open-heart surgeries now for about $30,000. So if you shop, if you ask, how much is this, that will accelerate and help this price transparent market that's emerging. You know, Oklahoma City is really leading the nation in this. There are multiple facilities in Oklahoma, the McBride Clinic Orthopedic Hospital, Oklahoma Heart Hospital, digestive disease specialists, the Oklahoma Cancer Group, Alita Toma and her partners that are oncologists. There are a couple of diagnostic imaging facilities that are posting prices. And most the thing I'm most excited about is Deaconess Hospital has recently joined us in this effort. So, you know, the idea that hospitals can't do this, well, come on. It's one with an ER and an ICU, and a, you know, it's a tertiary hospital that's beginning to quote some prices that I, you know, I'm working with very closely. So, you know, it patronizing those physicians, those facilities, you're asking what you can do to help. I mean, for yourself, you'll get care that's not contaminated by some other interest that you cannot possibly fathom.
Well said.
Yeah.
Do you have an MRI that people could pay to use?
No, I can send people to two places. One, one of the most recent add-ons to our sort of loosely associated group is Comprehensive Diagnostic Imaging, CDI, in Oklahoma City, and they're near Deaconess Hospital, and they're posting prices. I mean, you call them and ask them how much is an MRI of my knee, and they'll just give you a number. So they're not posting them online, but I won't be surprised if they're doing that for long.
Now, we've got a couple of organizations that provide health care up here in Tulsa that are following closer to this model. The Grassroots Clinic, are you familiar?
Grassroots Healthcare.
Yeah, that one.
91st and Sheridan, yeah, in Tulsa.
If their primary care, primarily primary care, ultimately when they find patients that need hernia surgery or gallbladder surgery or orthopedic surgery or ear, nose, and throat surgery, we usually see patients from outfits like that.
Exactly.
You know, Samaritan Ministry sends us almost everybody.
Hmm. Do you expect to expand? Do you expect to open additional facilities in other cities, or what's your plan or expectation?
We plan to expand by opening two operating rooms in addition to what we have. They're already under our roof. We just never finished them. But as long as patients are willing to travel to us, we don't really have any plans to expand outside of Oklahoma. And we've really been amazed at how willing people are to get on an airplane and fly here from California or Alaska or Florida or Massachusetts. Massachusetts is the biggest uptick in business recently, and I think it's just because the costs there are soaring thanks to RomneyCare.
Exactly.
I want to make a point here. You decided your prices and put your prices online, and you didn't do that by looking at insurance claims. In New Hampshire, because Senator Bill Brown suggested that we do this and adopt the New Hampshire model, here, I spent a whole Saturday looking at how New Hampshire did that. Well, they involved Maine, but how they did that was have the your insurance claim was sent to a state-funded entity to examine it. Of course, they're claiming they're de-identifying it, it's a wealth of information. So they're actually going, they're getting the prices by your insurance claim, which means they have to have a direct connection to the patient's records.
Right. And this is not anonymous information that they're getting, folks. If you,
complete demographic
absolutely.
Information about you.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking pages and pages of information about the patient. Then they encrypt it or de-identify it.
Right.
So they basically strip you naked electronically in order to get it. What you have done is you all got together and decided what your prices were, and you didn't invade people's privacy in order to do so.
That's right, and keep in mind the brilliant scholars in the Austrian School of Economics have taught for a long time, real prices emerge from a market economy. They just simply signify information, and they connote scarcity or abundance, whether it's services or goods. And the idea or the notion that some person is so brilliant that they can impose correct prices without resulting surpluses or shortages is insanity. I mean, price controls don't work because
never work.
No person is smart enough to actually know what that number is. And that number is may not be the right number tomorrow. That's the right number today.
Right.
So, yeah, real prices will emerge from a competitive market economy. The idea that some central planner can undo Hayek's road to serfdom and somehow beat the fatal conceit is crazy.
Well said.
Thank you. We're just about at the end here. How can people reach you and give us the website for the Surgery Center again?
Our website is surgerycenterok.com. My email address is actually on the website. There's a link to my blog actually on the website, and I encourage everybody to check it out.
Dr. Keith Smith. All right, and your action item for those living in Oklahoma is to call your state legislator and tell them to vote no on Senate Bill 254. And the House toll-free number is 800-522-8502, 800-522-8502. And the Senate's number is 800-865-6490. 865-6490. Vote no on Senate Bill 254. Dr. Smith, thank you very much, and we've got to have you back again. Just very delighted and very thankful to the Lord that there's somebody, an organization such as yourself, that's here in Oklahoma.
Absolutely.
And I appreciate your having me. My pleasure.
Well, that's the end of another hour of America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. We thank you for listening, and may God bless you.